4 a.m. this morning, the rain came through. And it was pouring down. And the echo on the roof at the back of our bedroom was just amazing. I love storms. I absolutely love thunder and lightning and waves and crashing, particularly when I'm in bed. It reminds me that the God of all creation holds all that in his hand, that his power and his might and his majesty way exceeds what you might see around you, that everything is just a breath to him, that he created everything there is and he sustains it and he holds it in his hands. Storms come, unexpected, uninvited, but they don't last because they pass. I'm going to read to you. I could speak here probably 2 hours this morning, so I'm going to really try not to. Hour and a half, we'd be good. But to make it work a little bit sharper, I'm going to ask you to follow me. I'm going to be reading the whole chapter. I've timed it, 6 minutes and 40 seconds. And that's at a normal pace. I've got an amazing map, which I'm going to leave this entirely in Christy's hands. When she thinks it's appropriate, she'll flick up a map. Don't switch your ears off while your eyes are working. Look, see, think, respond. We're going to then progress through the story that we're unfolding. I'm just giving you a plan of what I'm thinking I'm going to be doing. We're going to focus on some of the key points of what God is highlighting through this chapter. And we're going to land some of that application in our hearts. And the end response for us is if we don't know Jesus, we're going to wish we knew him and we're going to step forward in faith and receive him. If we do know him and we've been battered by some of the storms of life, we're going to stand up with courage and faith in our hearts and we're going to go unstoppable to fulfill the mission of God in our life. Maybe I'll just end there. Is that good? Are you there? Let's do it. All right. So, Acts chapter 27. Sorry, got to go one step back. Paul has been dragged in Caesarea before the highest authority in that particular space. Where's this this man whose name is Festus, who's the governor, who's taken over from Felix, the previous governor, and he's got the king, the local king, Agrippa, with Bernice, and they've heard Paul speak. Paul has explained who he is and what God's been doing with him. How he has outlasted trial after trial with one purpose in mind, to proclaim Jesus to the Gentiles. And they've tried to sort him out, try to understand him, but he's appealed to Caesar. And Festus says to him, well, you've appealed to Caesar, so to Caesar you must go. And chapter 27 starts where he is now starting this journey to Rome. And when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. And embarking in a ship of Adramyttium, which was about to sail the ports along the coast of Asia, we put out to sea, accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. The next day we put in at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him leave to go to his friends and to be cared for. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra in Lycia. There the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy and put us on board. We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus. And as the wind did not allow us to go any further, we sailed under the lee of Crete off Salmone. Coasting along it with great difficulty or with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, which is near the city of Lycia. since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous, because even the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." And the centurion paid more attention to the pilots and to the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. And because the harbor was not suitable to spend winter in, the majority decided to put out to sea from there on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, facing both southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. Now, when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete close to the shore. But soon a tempestuous wind called the northeaster struck down from the land. And when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. Running under the lee of a small island called Corda, we managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boat. And after hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would be run aground on the Cytus, they lowered the gear, and thus they were driven along. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay upon us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. Now, since they'd been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them, and he said, "Men, you should have listened to me." Ever heard that? "You should have listened to me and not set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on some island.' When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea about midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little further on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run onto the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under the pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, 'Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved.' Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, 'Today is the 14th day that you've continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you.' And when he had said these things, he took bread, and he gave thanks to God in the presence of all, and he broke it, and he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. When we'd eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. Now, when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach, and which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then, hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. Striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered that those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land, and the rest on planks or pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. What a journey. Acts 27 is one of those most detailed and famous records of an ancient sea voyage. And naval historians from all quarters have studied and researched and written much about what has happened, because it's really informing about how these ships operated in those times. I love history. Not all the nitty-gritty little details, but I love the flow in the stories. And my danger this morning is to actually get caught up in the history. But you know, there's some things that really we just need to understand. And so we'll get to explain some of that as we go through the journey. But I want to focus, to just start us this morning, to focus on Paul. Paul, as we know him, Paul the Apostle. This man who has written such a large portion of the New Testament. This man, Paul, who stands head and shoulders above people in the history of the world, way above, having had influence that has transformed the whole way in which the Western world has developed, changed the course of history in so many ways, not because of who Paul was, but because how God called him and used him, and through the proclamation of the gospel, he has become pivotal to world history. But here we find Paul, Caesarea, somewhere coming out of the prison, given over to the Praetorian Guard, who put him in chains, and then put him on a ship down in Caesarea and sent him on this journey. Paul looks like an absolute loser. He's in chains. He has no control of what happens next. He's appealed to Caesar. He's on a little sailing boat in the bottom of the ocean, kind of heading up the coast, and there he is. But do you know that at that moment, he is absolutely in the dead center of God's will? He is doing exactly what God wants him to do. He's right where he's supposed to be. He's so excited about all of this. He's not lost control. He's actually under God's control. He is convinced in his heart that nothing, nothing, nothing can obstruct the purpose and the plan of God for his life. Nothing can slow him down. Nothing can stop him. Nothing can take him back. In fact, in 26, in the previous chapter, he's speaking to the great authorities that are now holding him on some kind of a trial. And he just says these few little words in verses 17 and 18 of 26. He said, I've been delivered, God has delivered you from your people and from the Gentiles, Paul, to whom I am sending you. This is God speaking to Paul. To whom I am sending you to open their eyes, so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins, a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. Paul knows who he is and why he's here. That's what he's doing. God has saved him. He's put him in place, and now he's sending him. And he doesn't care. It can be Festus, Agrippa, it can be a centurion, it can be chains, it can be a boat, but God has told him he's going to fulfill what God has spoken. No high priest, no governor, no emperor, no soldier, no storm, no sickness, no other power at work in the whole of the cosmos can take you or me away from what God has purposed for our lives if we walk in faith with Him. None of them. That's got to land in our hearts this morning. Paul already knew he was going to Rome. Timeline in some of this, a little bit kind of understanding. In the year 56, Paul had written a letter to Rome. This amazing book of Romans. He'd already written it. It had been sent, telling them. He named more 30 names in that book. He already knew the people, even though he hadn't been there. He had a longing in his heart. He knew God had put something in him. I'm going to get to Rome. And he keeps writing to them, saying, I'm going to see you soon. It's not going to be long. When I get there, be ready. And he's telling them all the stuff that he's going to be bringing and all that God is going to do through Rome. What is going on in Paul's heart? If I get to Rome, you know what is going to happen? I'm going to preach the gospel there. I'm going to change things. Maybe all the senators will get saved. Maybe even Nero might get saved. You know, I don't know if he's got much hope for that. But maybe it's in his heart, you know. He knows what's happened. Claudius, who was the previous emperor, was poisoned by his wife. And now Nero's got in there. Nero's a little tilted to one side. But he's going to Rome. He's absolutely convinced God's got a purpose and a plan in his life. And he's ready to go. And now he's on this boat. And they're heading out. And things are starting to happen about him. He is ready. And as we go through the story, I've read it out first, so I don't know, I can go in and out of the story. You can remember there's this storm that's happening. It's 14 days in the deep. It's without sun, without light, without shelter, without food. It's desperate. He's in a storm. And he's singing the kind of songs we sung today. You know that every single one of us face storms in our life. In fact, if you think of Paul, it's just like he got saved and his whole life from then is just a storm. Wherever he goes, every single opportunity, he's preaching the gospel and someone's whacking him. Then he gets up and he preaches the gospel and someone whacks him. And we know who's actually behind that. But you know, we're in the same place. You stand up to do what you think is what God's purpose for you and you'll get a whack. And you know where that's coming from? Same place. But you stand up and you face storms. In fact, Job, remember Job, all the storms he had in his life? He's a little quote one of his friends says, but a man is born to trouble just as sparks fly upward. Kind of sounds weird when you hear it. What is the common denominator in all of these things that we hear? It's by faith we stand. Faith in God alone. We trust him with everything. That is where we stand. That's where Paul stands. Not in his eloquence, not in his great skills, not in some kind of other thing. I have faith in God. I believe in who you are and what you've said, Lord. Everything about this journey is about faith, 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 faith. Not faith in faith, faith in God. Storms are happening right now in our lives, all of us. Some of us, we think we're like that. At that moment where the south wind's blowing, it's kind of a gentle breeze. It's a warm breeze. It's okay. It's not too bad. Storm's not there yet. Just watch out. We're all living in a really interesting time in history. You've got to be blind not to know that. I'm watching all your masks. We're living in a really interesting time in global politics. We're living in a time of all kinds of change. Good news for you. That's never changed. Not since Jesus was here, and it's not going to change until Jesus comes back. Get over it. It's not so special. But you are under scrutiny right now in the middle of that storm. I'm under scrutiny about how I conduct myself, how I live right now. How do I conduct my life? People are watching how you live. Paul is under scrutiny by everybody on that boat. They'd want to see what he's made of. They've heard about him. What are you made of? How do you cope? What do you rely on? Storms test what you really value and what you're really made of. It's a stress test. It's a pressure point. Storms reveal weaknesses and storms change values. So let's go into a little bit more detail. I'm kind of watching my clock carefully and I've got little things that says 3 minutes on the next section. I love weather. Do you love weather channels? I like watching the synoptic chart and the radar and this is all happening. Now you need to let that map come up there and somehow If you're looking online, you've now been relieved. You don't have to see me. You can see the map. So down in the bottom right-hand corner, Judea, Nabatea, you'll see down there Jerusalem, Caesarea, and that's where the journey starts. Paul gets on the boat. In one day, they sail from Caesarea to Sidon. There he stops. There's a whole bunch of Christians, and they start looking after him, and they get him set up, and then the boat struggles because the wind, and this is what I just wanted the map to show you. You can't really see it really well, but on the side where you see Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, all those places we read about earlier in the chapters, there's ranges of mountains. And then on the left here, you see Italy and Macedonia. There are ranges of mountains. And in the middle, there's a big gap. And in summer, there's a gentle wind that blows from the east. And in winter, the wind changes from the west. And it comes a northwesterly, comes down those mountains, sometimes gently, but sometimes more westerly. So if you see the ship from this side going to that side, from Judea towards Italy, in winter, it's facing the wind that's coming, the west wind. And the Romans had a name for that. They used to actually say between the month of the end of October and the beginning of April, there was a word that said mare clausium, which means the sea is closed, do not sail. You can't get to Rome. Basically, shop shut, don't do it. This is the last boat. We read early on, remember it said the fast had already passed. It was already way past the time when any boat should be sailing. It was the last Egyptian boat from Alexandria. They had a whole cargo of wheat. They were going to do some really good trading because they were going to be the last boat to Rome before winter, which meant the price would be high. This is it. We're good. We're sharp businessmen. We're taking a bit of a risk, you know, risk reward. We'll just manage it. We'll get there just in time. And then something happened. I don't know. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of the story. The ship, just remember, none of these ships are made of metal. None of these ships used nails to put them together. They were made of planks. They had holes drilled in certain spots, and they had ropes that tied them together. They were this kind of boat, the grain boat, not the little one going from Sidon up to Myra. That was a smaller boat. This was probably 180 foot long, not very long, 50 meters, small boat. 400 tons, about, you know, just looked like a big fat barrel sitting in the sea. It had one big mast in the middle with a big square sail, and they'd pack as much cargo in below as possible. They didn't have one little rudder. They had two big oars around the back, and they'd use those oars to steer the boat, and that was it. It was a lumbering, slow, heavy, moving vessel that would carry cargo. In that time, there were only two kinds of boats. One was a warship, the other was a cargo ship. No cruise liners, nothing like that. When they put the prisoners on, where did they go? The below decks was filled with amphorae. Those are nice big clay jars filled with wheat, sealed up so they wouldn't get wet. Where did the prisoners go? Where did the sailors stay? On top the deck. Other cargo was packed up there. When you came on board, you didn't have a galley where you got your breakfast served. You brought your own. Used to probably take 8 to 10 days in normal time to get from Alexandria to Rome. This is going to be a journey. Why was the Alexandrian boat up at Myra? Well, because the winds were already westerly. So they were tacking across the wind up, and then they were going to try and tack through the side, go up through the little islands and find their way there somehow. They were making a very careful move. What were the passengers doing? They were sitting on the deck, prisoners. Were they cared for very well? No. But there was one man there who was Julius, the centurion, a man of stature. One thing about centurions, Romans knew all kinds of things. They had a bad choice of politician. They did not know how to do that. What they did know was that when the army, they chose certain people, the centurion, a man in charge of 100 men, solid, stable, risk taker, know how to assess things and get things going. Backbone of the Roman army, centurions. And he has Julius, and he's a man with discernment. And he looks at Paul, he reckons this is a guy of some importance. Actually, he likes him. He likes him because he's a bold, strong man, and he's a bold, strong man. And he likes guys like that. He doesn't like these wimpy other prisoners, whatever they are. but he likes Paul. In fact, he likes him so much, he allows him to bring his friends with him. But you can't have friends on a prison boat, so what does he do? Well, Luke and Aristarchus are considered Paul's slaves. Well, you can have your slaves come with you, that's okay. So just imagine this. Luke and Aristarchus, faithful traveling companions, are prepared to say, Paul, we're coming with you. Just count us as your slaves, and we'll come with you. And so the journey goes, and so they start. And they go from, as the story goes, they go up to Myra, they get onto the next ship. The ship starts trying to duck around the corner. If you can look on the map just for a second. From Myra to Snidus, they're actually trying to head up through Achaia, around the bottom of Sparta, but the wind suddenly gets stronger and stronger, and it changes. And they have no option but to turn a little bit south, and they try and sneak around the bottom of Crete, because Crete's also got mountains, and it'll protect them from the northwesterly wind. So they start sneaking around the bottom of the island. And it takes them a long time. It's not a quick journey. And they get stuck in the wind, and they get pressured. Let me just read a few verses just to give us the context here. And so verse 8, well, I'll just say, coasting along with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, which was near the city of Lycia. Since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous, because even the fast was already over, Paul advised them. He's got the ear of the centurion. He says to them, sirs, I perceive the voyage will be with injury and with much loss. It's going to cause a great problem. I think you should change your plan. You're taking a really big risk. Don't do this. And the centurion is a steady man, says, right, well, we'll do this the right way. Who's the owner of the ship? That's the guy with all the wheat below. He's got a plan. He's got an investment. What do you think we should do? Now, we should get to Rome. He says to the pilot of the ship, who's the captain, who's probably looking at the owner, and he says, what do you think? We'll get to Rome. And the centurion does what people do. We just decide. Majority rules. All right, I also got to get to Rome. So that's it. We're on our way. And they make a decision. And they say, right, this is it. And just to back up their decision, suddenly a warm, gentle south wind blows. And if you looked at the map, you'd see the south wind came off Egypt, brought with it this amazing fragrance, you know. Africa smells amazing. Sometimes. And it's like confirmation, you know. Our decision is good. The little south wind blows. Now, we're living in Adelaide, so I can tell you this story because you all understand this. There are those days when suddenly all goes quiet in the middle of this afternoon and it's still. And we all decide to go to the beach because it's so warm. And we sit down on the beach and you get this gentle little breeze that's just coming off the land. And you think, this is idyllic. But what we can see from the beach in Adelaide would be on the southwest, a big black cold front coming. What we know is just ahead of a warm easterly, northeasterly wind is a really ferocious southeaster coming. But the problem when you're sailing along the lee of Crete is you've got high mountains on your windward side, and you can't see what's on the other side of the mountains, and you don't know what's going to happen next. You just feel the lovely breeze. It's keeping you safe, keeping you close to the shore, and you're just chugging along in this big, fat old grain boat, and they're thinking, this is great. Life is good. From Fair Havens to the next port of Phoenix is a half a day sailing. It's only 50 Ks. It's easy. It's not a big leap. We can do it. We'll just get there. And as they come past, and I can't remember the name of the mountain now, there's a particular mountain, but then there's a big cleft in the valley, and it's just how it works. As they got to that moment, what came was a change of direction in the wind that was northwesterly. It swung to northeasterly, and it came raging. Literally, in our understanding, a cold front from Siberia, dropping freezing cold air in a, what they called here, a tempestuous wind. The word in the Greek actually is the word we get our word typhoon from. It raged. Suddenly, side on to the ship, there's this wind that hit them like a train. I'm pretty sure it pushed the boat. I'm pretty sure the sail got flapping in all kinds of directions, and they tried to keep their course, staying close to the side, but they could not. And the wind was starting to knock waves up. They would have started taking on water. Their only defense was turn the rudder, turn the head of the boat away, get the wind behind us, otherwise we will sink now. And that was the beginning of this chaotic journey. Have you ever made a decision and 2 minutes later a south wind blew on that decision? Lord, I want to buy this new car. It's amazing. It costs about 5 years' salary. And the little south wind was, the little consultant behind the desk says, your finance has been approved. Huh? In the next 5 years, you're paying every cent you've got to pay for this stupid car. How many times have you made decisions that seem right in your own eyes because you've listened to the advice of the wrong people and then you find yourself deep in the storm that has come upon you? When the majority decides, when you listen to the wrong voices, when you head on the direction that you'd think is right for you, be careful. You need to listen to the right voices. The world right now is filled with so much conventional wisdom that is completely unconventional and is definitely not wisdom. We've got masquerading truths floating around. All you need to do is go on YouTube and start looking, and there's a fantastic algorithm or two that will create around your head an echo chamber that will give you everything you want to hear. None of it is truth. Who do you listen to? Paul has got a very clear understanding of how you listen. He listens to God. He lives by revelation of what Jesus has said to him. He's received the Holy Spirit. He listens to the Holy Spirit. He knows the Scriptures. He has listened to tested prophetic voices around him. He is established in the call of God. And so he responds and he gives proper weight to the things that need to be listened to. Faith leads his decision making, not information and not fake news. He listens to what God is saying. How do we listen? Where do we go? And this is sometimes maybe a bit difficult for us because we think we know better. Well, Paul was ancient. He didn't have CNN. He didn't have YouTube. He didn't have all this stuff, you know. He couldn't make good decisions. He made the best decisions because he was not cluttered in his understanding with rubbish. He knew what God was saying to him. And I want to say to us, the next season for us, the storms that are raging around us, we have to learn to switch off all of those other voices and hear God's voice. I've said a couple of things there. What is it that we listen to? We need to be led by the Spirit of God. Not the world spirit, not some other spirit, not a spirit that we kind of conjure up when we want to hear. We need to turn our attention to the Word of God and the Scriptures. And then with that, we need to listen to those tested voices that God has put in our lives. If you can't see it, taste it, touch it. If you can't observe the life of the people that are giving you advice, you probably shouldn't be listening to them. Faith in Jesus and in His Word will lead us into a place where we trust Him, and that act of obedience that is in our lives will lead us in the way that He wants us to go. Right, so the decision's made, they turn south, the storm is raging. I've been in a storm on a little Hobie cat. Took Gail in it too. 2 minutes in the storm, the rudder broke. Nowhere to go. Now we're trying to sail backwards. We're getting in trouble. We're quickly trying to move the sail, and then the deck gets a hole in it, and we fall in the water. And now we're trying to get... Oh, anyway, let's stop the story. She still remembers. the boat is going, it's held together just by a wish and a prayer, and it's starting to get wobbly. Those boats don't last in big storms. So the sailors, first of all, there's a little boat on the back. They drag it up because it's going to sink. They put it on the deck. Then they get some big cables, and they go to the front of the boat, and they drop these ropes over the front of the boat, and they allow them to go under the keel, and they pull them up, and they tie it. They tie it like a brace around the boat, three or four, five, or as many as they can. They try and tie the boat together because the planks are just going to shoot apart. Things are so bad that they are starting to lose all control. They've got no way. They take the sail down. Now they're just being driven by the wind. That little Syrtis or Syrtis, however you want to say that name, actually refers to a whole bunch of sandbanks on the African coast. It was known as the graveyard of ships. And they'd been pushed towards the graveyard of ships. They now want to try and lighten the boat. They're trying to. So what do? It says they took the gear and threw it overboard with their own hands. What do they mean by that? All the timbers that they had, spare masts, spare little rudders, spare bits and pieces, they're chucking it overboard. All their reliance, like this is a little sacrifice to the water gods. Can we just chuck this off? Maybe I'll be saved. I'll just do these little things. And they tried that, and they threw off the cargo on the deck. All the cargo on the deck. They start throwing that off as well. Let's just lighten this plate. Maybe we'll get out of this. Maybe we'll live. Maybe we'll live. 3 days. Unending wind. Unending rain. They must be freezing. They are icy. They are gripped by fear, it says in the text. And then we get to verse 20. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay upon us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. All hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. I don't doubt that this morning in this room, some of you have got this incredible mask on your face, and I'm not talking about the little blue one. I'm talking about this self-preservation mask that says, if you could just see the real me, I'm in the storm. There's turmoil. Everything is shaking. I'm going to come apart at the seams. I've tightened my belt, but I think I might pop. There's so much pressure. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've given up all hope. If you, that person today, maybe you're sitting at home, maybe just by some amazing way you've tuned in today, if you're in that state, this is for you. There's a way out of this. There's a way for this to be resolved. When all hope is finally abandoned. And Luke's writing this. I wonder if Luke had abandoned all hope. I know one man who didn't. His name was Paul. Absolutely filled with what he started with. What is that? I'm going to get to Rome. Even if I sail there on a plank, maybe it'll be a surfboard by the looks of it. I'm going to get there because God has said. Because I have faith in God. Not faith in the pilot or the boat or the ship or whatever else. I have faith in God. What he said he will do. Storms change your values. I said that early on. Storms change your values. Those sailors abandoned stuff over the side. Their spare rudder, their spare mast, their spare sails, whatever other cargo was on the deck. That is money just going, can we get rid of this? They changed your values. There's a reality check in our lives when we realize that we are out of control and we cannot control things. And if you're sitting here today and you think you can, you're deluded. You cannot control events. You cannot make things happen as hard as you try. There's only one way. You need a but God moment in your life. But God can change everything. And Paul stands up, verse 21. Paul stood up among the men and he said to them, men, you should have listened to me and not set sail from Crete, incurring the injury and loss. Yet now I urge you, take heart. I wonder who was crying. I wonder who was praying and babbling whatever they were thinking. And he's saying, take heart. for there will be no loss of life among you. Well, they're listening to him now. No loss of life among you, only the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. Why was Paul full of faith? Why was he not panicking and screaming and carrying on? Because he knew he belonged to God. Ownership had changed from Paul being in charge of Paul to God being in charge of Paul. And in the middle of this, I'm sure he must have prayed some kind of a prayer. Hey, Lord, the stuff that you own is going to sink. It's not my problem, it's your problem. Your stuff is in trouble. Your people are in trouble. Deep relationship. I belong to you. You've got me in the hollow of your hand. I'm trusting you. I'm being held by you. I am not afraid of anything, Lord, because you've said and you will deliver what you've said. David, we had a couple of psalms read out this morning. I love psalms because they actually reflect our heart. Psalm 34, verse 4, I sought the Lord and he answered me and he delivered me from all my fears. And I'm in trouble, what do I do? And I'm afraid, what do I do? God, help me. Don't need fancy prayers, you just need real prayers. You need faith directed towards God, absolute trust in him. God, my body's failing me, I might die right now. Everything is going south, what do I do? God, save me. And he says, I will, I'll show you how. Second thing that Paul that gives him this confidence is he has devoted his life to serve God, and God has told him, your job is not done, Paul. You will stand before Caesar in Rome. So he has confidence. I'm not going to die in the Mediterranean Sea because I'm going to stand before Caesar. That is a given. God has said so. I am not going to fall down on this job. I'm standing ready to go the next thing. Faith rises in his heart. And what does he say to these friends around him? He says, well, you've got good news for all of you. I'm on this boat. This boat is going to deliver me safe. Therefore, if you stay on this boat, it'll deliver you safe. It'll get you to where you need to be. And so he says, get something to eat, guys. It's been 14 days. You're wasting away. You need your strength now. Get something to eat. So they eat. A couple of sailors. Very wise men. Middle of the night. They've sailed a lot. It's midnight. They hear a change in the rhythm of the sea. Something sounds different. They can hear rocks. There must be something going on. We're getting close to land. And they start doing a sounding. You know, lead weight on a string, drop it down 20 fathoms. A little bit later, drop it down again 15 fathoms. We're definitely getting to a shallow. We're getting to where the rocks are. We're getting to danger. Guys, we need to slow down. Wait for dawn. It's midnight. Have you ever noticed when the crisis comes, it's always at midnight? It's always dark. It's always horrible. You can't see anything, and the crisis is upon you. And Paul is listening, and he's watching, and he's just taking, I think he's pretty unmoved. And so they get to the point where now, all right, that's it. Let's get some anchors out. So they've got four anchors left. They chuck them over the back of the boat. They try and drag them along, slow us down so we don't hit the rocks too soon. And they pray. This is now they start to pray. It's interesting, eh? And they prayed for day. They prayed for daylight to come. And then Paul turns to them, and it's just before day. And while he's about ready to go and see what's going on, the sailors get a plan. Last ditch. The last attempt to save themselves. We're just going to put another anchor off the front, and they get the boat ready to go, and we're just going to nip off the front quickly and put another anchor in. In fact, they've determined in their hearts, we're going to just, you guys can sink and do what you like. We're going to take it in our own hands. We sailors, we've got a better chance on our own than with you. We can do this ourselves. We don't need you. And Paul basically says to the centurion, if they go in that boat, they're going to go on their own. They're going to die. Get them back on the boat. Get them back on the ship. And they cut the rope loose, and the sailors are then left on the boat. And that spoke so much to me when I read that. How many times is it that you wouldn't think, well, I'll just jump ship. I'm just going to get out of this place. I've had enough of this. I've had it more than once in my life. The heat is too big. The storm is too ferocious. I'm just going to make a way out. I'm going to just sneak out under cover of darkness. I'm going to find another way. I'm going to make my own plane, my own plan. I'm going to trust in the things that I can actually trust in again. I've lost everything else. I've lost every other resource. I'm now going to just trust in me. I'll just get it out there. I'm sure I can do it on my own. Let me tell you, that is death. Absolute death. People do this all the time, sadly. They trust in their own wisdom. I just call it monkey wisdom. They just trust in themselves. They want to jump ship. They want to get over the side. They want to make their own way. They'll just walk away from church. They'll just walk away from relationships. They'll just walk away from the things the way God has actually put people around them to protect them, to help them, to speak to them, to encourage them, but they'll just bail out because they've closed down. Don't do it. Don't jump ship. And then Paul comes, and I just love these little passages where he comes along towards the end, and he says to them, verse 33, as day was about to dawn, Paul urged them to take some food, saying, today is the 14th day, and you've been continuing in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you, take some food, for it'll give you strength. Not a hair is to perish on the head of any one of you. And when he'd said these things, I bet you Paul didn't just say those words. He's been preaching the gospel. You can't help him. You know, you squeeze toothpaste, toothpaste comes out. You stamp on Paul's toes, the gospel comes out. And then he tells them, he's told them about Jesus. They know what he stands for. They know why he's going to Rome. They know what it's all about. And he sits there and he says, guys, we need to eat. And it's not just about put food in your tummy. You need that. But it's one step further. He takes bread. I think Trina just alluded to that as we broke bread earlier. He takes bread. This is representing the body of Christ. Jesus, you died for me so that I could live. You give me physical sustenance, but you give me deep sustenance of the Spirit. You sustain my soul. Yeah. Psalm 23 echoing in the background. Set a table before you in the presence of your enemies. There you sit and you eat. And you take the bread with joy into your mouth and you say, yes, Lord. And he's in the middle of the storm and he eats the bread and he has something to drink. Because in the midst of your storm, Jesus is with you. No matter what the storm, no matter how badly you've screwed up, how badly you've done it, he's with you. And he's there to save you. And then it all starts to happen. Dawn breaks and they see an island. They don't know what it is. They just see some land. They don't even recognize it. I have to just give you this. Sorry, I've got to just jump back to the story. I love the history part, isn't it? Yeah? So, can you see where Malta is on the map? Up there, Malta. They've been pushed by the wind somehow all the way to Malta. They didn't know where they were. They didn't have a clue. I have to give you perspective. One little boat, 180 foot long, a lumbering tub of a grain vessel with no masts, no sails properly working, and they've just lumbered across the ocean. Malta is 350 square kilometers in size. And you're going to say, that's massive. Let me tell you, it fits 35 times on Kangaroo Island. That's how big Malta is. Sorry, Maori. It's just a little spot like that. By the way, it's Brian's birthday. Malta, this tiny little dot in the middle of that ocean, in the middle of the raging storm, and the boat happens to arrive there. Just happens. And right in front of the boat, it just happens to be, and Maury can talk to you about Malta, it's really just a rock in the sea, a lot of cliffs, a lot of dangerous places to shipwreck, but there's just a beach right in front of them. And so they put up one little bit of sail, the foresail, they put it up and just kind of pushes them towards the beach. And the boat runs aground, and the natural thing the soldiers are going to do is like, these prisoners are going to escape now. If they'd go, if the charge for us, if we lose a prisoner, we die. Therefore, the prisoner dies, we can present a body, we didn't lose a prisoner. So they get the sword out, they're ready to cut them all, and Julius says, not a chance. Paul's a good guy. He needs to be saved. Don't do that. guys, get in the water. You can swim, go for the beach. If you can't swim, grab a plank, go for the beach. And they arrive safe on the beach, and the word of God is fulfilled. How do we land this morning? Where do we come in the middle of all of this? There's been enough story told. You can go and read it yourself. God will start speaking to you. Let me put it to you this way. If you do not have faith in God, you have faith in something else. And I have an absolute certainty that that will fail you. If you have faith in yourself, forget it. You're done. You can't do this. You need to be saved. You need to fulfill the purpose God has for you. Any other purpose is disastrous. There's a storm raging outside. The world is going, as they used to say, well, they do say, going to hell in a handbasket. It literally is. Without Jesus, there is no hope. That horrible line in the middle of this, they come to the end of themselves and they've given up all hope of being saved. And Paul stands up and says, there is a hope, an everlasting, enduring, powerful, unstoppable, unchangeable hope. Jesus will save you from yourself. So this morning, if you don't know who Jesus is, if you don't know that, you need to make sure today. We'd love to pray with you. We'd love to explain more to you. But today, the really simple part of it is if you need Jesus, you just do what these guys do. They cry out, God, I need you. Help me. I cried out to the Lord and he heard me and he saved me. Faith is required. Faith is given to you. This morning, faith is being poured out over this camera this morning, over our ears this morning. Faith is being poured out. Respond in faith to God. If you're a Christian and you're rowing your own little boat and you're trying to make it on your own because the faith that you have is actually faith in your faith or faith in the things that you think is faith, forget it. It's faith in Christ alone, by grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone. That's how we stand. Second thing is this, when we believe God, we are then to put our trust in Him completely and absolutely. Because with God, you can outlast the trial and you can overcome a storm. If you give Him all of your reliances, all of your self-effort, and you put your trust completely, totally, and utterly in Him, He will deliver you safe. You noticed in the ship, I know that there's little things that happen. There was wheat in the hold of that ship. And there comes a moment when wheat is no longer a profit. It's just ballast. And when you're about to shipwreck, you need to get rid of the ballast. And I know this, that in every one of our lives, we give it all to Jesus, but we've got a little trap door with a little secret spot that is ours. And God's got a purpose for you. He wants all of you. No trapdoor. No ballast that's calling itself treasure. Nothing of self to be left. Trust Him with all of your heart. And then when you trust Him, you will obey what He says to you. You will jettison everything that's not Him. You will embrace all that is Him, and then you will discover that your purpose in Him becomes clear, and you will find yourself safely on the beach that He's prepared for you to walk on and to fulfill the mission that He's called you to. I hope you enjoy storms from now on, because storms change us. They cause us to reevaluate, and they cause us to lift our eyes in faith. So this morning, as we come to the end of this, don't jump ship. Don't rely on yourself. Put your faith in Christ alone and trust Him for the next part of the journey.